Welcome to episode 17 of HardcoreGaming101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate on Twitter. My name is Xerxes, and you know what kinds of people learn from their mistakes? People who make mistakes. My panelists today are...
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Satanga.
On this podcast, we have three rules. Okoko Ofin, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Keji Ofin, you can nominate one game at a time via Twitter by hitting me up at GC9X. Keta Ofin, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but please don't nominate games we've already ranked. Somebody just did that. You can see the master list for yourself. Check it out at bit.ly/47kgames. Our next game for discussion is Metal Gear Solid, which was nominated by at DJ Funk Nova on Twitter. It was developed by Konami and published by Konami for the Sony PlayStation. Earliest release date is September 3rd, 1998 in Japan.
And I gotta say, this game still looks pretty amazing for a game from 1998.
For a PlayStation game, it looks really good.
Definitely.
It looks really, really good.
My only fault with the graphics is that the people's faces kind of look like they're sculpted out of potatoes, but no.
The classic PlayStation potato.
Yeah, but that's just the PS1. You couldn't really get too much higher than the hardware there.
The N64 had just as much potato face when you did realistic faces. You can't do realistic faces with this like level of texturing. It's just not possible.
No, that's a good point. I mean, Konami had their characters faceless in the 8 and 16.
I don't know. I mean, like, you could play Hybrid Heaven, right, with the expansion pack and kind of up-res it, right?
I mean, you could technically play
a little
Hybrid
bit better.
Heaven.
Yeah. No, you can. You can and should play Hybrid Heaven.
I beat it for one of our episodes.
I'm just going to throw this out. Yeah, you should listen to our Hybrid Heaven episodes, one of our very early episodes for the earlier version of this podcast. I still think very highly of it. Honestly, I feel like it is a more innovative and interesting game than Metal Gear Solid.
Okay, well, now that we've started with that and everyone's just killed Xerxes, let's continue on to Metal Gear Solid.
Worse than X-Men?
PlayStation video game by famous, I don't know, one of the only genuinely autorial sort of game developers, producers, like Kojima.
There's no such thing as a video game auteur after like the Atari.
I disagree. There's no, with Kojima, like every one of his games that he has ever got his hands into is just like, this is a Kojima game.
You could take somebody else's game and it would be the same.
Well, in a lot of ways, that's what he does.
We're going to make this guy talk to the camera. This person is going to refer specifically to the player, possibly by name. This guy is going to do something completely insane that takes everybody out. Like, the suspension of disbelief is going to be shot, and then you're done.
I would say this game doesn't do that as poorly. It's got a very, very
somebody's going to wet their pants.
That's important. You got to have
important.
That.
Yeah, you gotta have the pants.
That's key to the whole thing.
I'll warn you all that this has a very, being as Metal Gear, it's very likely our conversation is going to split off into tangent land left and right.
Well,
this game is a tangent. Let's be honest.
It is. Like, so let's talk about how this game relates to the Metal Gear games that came before. I don't think we have to say too much because everybody knows everything there is to know about this game already.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm not going to really describe the mechanics. I mean, I'm just going to assume that you know what Metal Gear is.
It's a partial remake of Metal Gear 2, isn't it?
Yeah, it does take a lot of elements that Metal Gear 2, the MSX one, not Snake's Revenge, which was not made by Kojima, we should note. Metal Gear 2 had the big radar and the cone of sight that the enemies have on it's pretty much the radar and, like, the crawling and, most of the stuff that you get in Metal Gear 2, you get here also, like the Stinger missile,
right.
And I forget, the remote control missiles from the first, but I don't want to call it a remake exactly, though, just takes a lot of influence. I mean, but before they rebranded it with the Solid name, this is basically Metal Gear 3.
So does... I mean, yeah, that's kind of how I thought of it. But I didn't realize there was, when it came out, I didn't realize that the MSX2 version of, or the MSX2 sequel existed.
Yeah,
I would say it was a sequel to Snake's Revenge.
I would say, like, a lot of people would have taken this game kind of up front as, like, this is the first Metal Gear game they played. I would say quite possibly. I know, like, some Americans would have played the NES one, and the Japanese would have played, like, the MSX and Famicom versions. But, you know, the PlayStation was popular everywhere, and Metal Gear was not a big franchise to a lot of people. Until Solid came out, then it was just like, this is the most important game in 1998 kind of deal.
Yeah, Konami had already built a lot of goodwill with Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and this was their next major big project, so... I don't know, I almost want to say Castlevania gave MGS the push by proxy for it to really stand out. Although it is too bad that we didn't get Metal Gear 2 originally, because there are a few plot threads from there that carry over here that some people are wondering, who is Gray Fox anyway? And well, he was a major character in MG2, but we don't really get to understand that unless you look into the lore, but now I'm being a nerd. So
I'll give our listeners a hint for Metal Gear lore. Even if you don't know it, just assume it doesn't make any sense, and you will be correct.
No, you're right. I mean,
it doesn't make any sense.
I mean,
like, none of this stuff makes sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Metal Gear lore is a guy trying to, like, wrestle with spaghetti in, like, a big vat of spaghetti.
Right.
Well, to be fair, the first game, the first Solid game is technically straightforward. I mean, it's just a standard apparent ransom situation.
You don't need to know anything about the previous game.
See, that's what I actually really like about Metal Gear Solid. It is, in a lot of ways, if you don't have to know anything before, and you certainly don't have to know anything after. In the whole game, it actually fits together quite well. There's some plot holes and things in places, but at its core, it's kind of like, it feels like almost a, an action movie from sort of the time. You know, it's like, there's a military guy, and he's taken out of retirement, and he has to go and get the bad guys who have, like, a giant robot that shoots nukes, and it's like, okay, go get him.
I always wonder, like, does the CIA ever, like, consider not pulling somebody out of retirement? Maybe they should, like, you know, build up the bench a little bit.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay,
some young dudes out here. Let's give these men and women a chance. Why do we always have to pull the guy out of retirement?
But there's a good reason why, right? Like, the plot actually demonstrates a reason why it has to be Snake, and it's not because
Snake
of his talent.
Like, kind of the Unabomber? Is that what it is? Yeah.
We don't want to go. Let's not throw around the, like, kind of end game spoilers for it. But the game does try its best to clean it up. Although, in typical Kojima fashion, it's kind of like a 15-minute long talking cutscene where it's just and this is why I did this, and because of this, you are this, and I am this.
We can't not talk about this game, not discuss the cutscenes. They do go on for a while.
And even so, it's a little generous to call most of them cutscenes, because for the a lot of the conversations take place in the codec, and that's just talking heads. So I don't know; do those count as cutscenes full on? I'm not sure exactly how to define it.
Kind of, but some of them are deliberately just there to be ignored. Like, they don't serve any purpose at all. They're just there to be fun, and that is kind of what gives the Metal Gear series from this game forward its character, for better or worse. I'm going to say really quick where I'm coming from with these games. As a big fan of the original Metal Gear for NES, I could not really get into Metal Gear Solid when it came out, mostly because I got really into – what happened was I waited a little while, and then I got the VR missions, and I am like MLG pro at those VR missions. I can do things
that are great.
That do not make any sense, but I have this weird intuitive – it's kind of like my Bushido Blade abilities. Like, they don't – you're just kind of using the force at a certain level. But I am not that good at the real Metal Gear games, so it's weird. But I my problem with it is that the story is ridiculous. I've come to kind of accept that as just being – but at the time, it was really weird. At the time, it was like, this is – you can either just dive in and just accept it for what it is and have fun with it. But it's not normal, and it's like very, very silly.
Yeah.
But yet super duper serious as a heart attack in many levels, but also incredibly silly.
I almost want to say that being po-faced all the time, it does sort of keep its own. It is really aware of what it is. The word basis.
It's kind of like if you just like. Imagine like the most dramatic scene in like the original like First Blood, the first Rambo movie, when he's like escaping from like he just escapes from the the police
prison.
Station.
Oh, that's pretty-
and then he's talking to some and he's like, you drew first blood, you drew and he just rips a huge fart. That's about that is about the like the weirdness, like the weird dichotomy of tones that exists in this game at all times.
Well, I'm actually watching the scene where Iacon's pissing himself as you speak. So
yeah, so it's a stealth action game, right? That's a stealth espionage action or whatever it says on the box. And it, much more so, I think, than the overhead, like the Zelda-esque original MSX games, NES games, it really does accomplish that because you have to use your radar screen, especially in this game, you really have to be paying attention to that. And that's that kind of makes the game. And
I would say the gameplay is rock solid in most regards.
Yeah, I agree.
It's very, very fun.
No, I also concur. It was certainly a step up. Actually, I think that the first Metal Gear Solid here kind of hits a good balance between doable and innovative and not punching you in the face all the time. Because
no, if they could, yeah, if he wanted to make, I don't know why I say he, it's definitely they, okay, people. No, there's no game that's made by one person. It doesn't happen.
There's a big team behind him, but I do believe,
there's one guy who's been at the company longest, and because it's Japan, he gets to take credit for everything.
I want to say, they always seem to give a damn about Kojima in a lot of ways. It doesn't seem like he takes all the credit by himself. They do seem to want to give him the credit, the team themselves.
I'd like to talk about the gameplay just a little bit. This is really where stealth in games really became a big thing. Maybe you could also say the Thief series, but that was really more of a cult thing, I'd say. This really popularized it.
Thief is very popular in its own, PC capsule, definitely because consoles were more popular, and Metal Gear Solid was an incredibly popular console game. It made a huge difference. I think Metal Gear really worked because it was one of the first stealth games I've seen where it's a stealth game for almost the whole time, and it's not super punishing if you get caught in Metal Gear. It goes, and then it goes,
people look for you for up to maybe like a minute, and then they just go, okay,
seconds.
I guess everything's fine.
It's much easier to escape capture in MGS1 because, and I'm going to admit a little bit of a hot take here, I was never very fond of hiding bodies in the later games because I sometimes had to get away as soon as I could, and then these jackasses would keep discovering the bodies that I left and just keep inflating the time. But in MGS1, bodies disappear, so you don't have to worry about that, and I've always liked that.
I mean, what it does in the later games is it just encourages you to kill absolutely everybody in the area. And that's not kind of supposed to be the point of the games. It's supposed to reward you for not doing that.
Well, I would say that Metal Gear Solid here is it's driving a balance between game and realism, whereas the later ones, in this case, they push it too far towards realism, and it doesn't really fit.
One thing I like about the games is that I like the idea of an action game where the ultimate challenge is to try not to kill anybody kill as few people as you can get away with, because in real life you would just kill everybody because anybody who came in front of you, because you can't risk failing the mission. Too many lives are riding on this, but there's no real nuclear destruction at risk here. It's just a game, so you can be merciful. But that's the cool thing about the stealth mechanic, is that you'd have the discovery thing, and this is held over from the earlier Metal Gear games, but it kind of gamifies the whole concept of hide and seek kind of stealth action, where you can get discovered and people will start looking for you, and they behave like a normal person for about 100 seconds tops.
Yeah,
you're like, well, Private Johnson is dead, but I didn't see this guy for 100 seconds, so I'm just going to say everything's fine. Let's go back to business.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of appreciate it when the AI is partially idiotic, because then it makes me feel like I'm not being oppressed all the time.
Right. In reality, they would just go over the entire premises with a fine-tooth comb, set up a perimeter, and you would be caught.
It's like realistic Pac-Man. If the four ghosts work together, you'd never win.
Right, you'd never win. So that is what I like about the game, is that it just has the perfect mixture of not realism, but realism-esque, about as real as
it's realistic, but it doesn't stop being fun.
It's not realistic. It's the proper combination. It's like a unique and winning combination of real-ishness and actual games.
It sits there in that. And I think that that's partially due to the time period it came out. It's like, well, we can't do realism, so we'll just kind of do kind of realism, and it'll probably work. Yeah. And everyone who played it was just like, wow, this is so realistic compared to Quake. And it's like, yeah, but it's not realistic.
It is. Yeah. That's what's cool about it is that each – okay, so I'll talk about successive Metal Gear games just in broad strokes. But each Metal Gear Solid game that I've played, and I haven't played them all, but it seems like each one gets rid of an older concept, changes it, like whether it ditches the radar or something like that, and then introduces a new real-ish thing that is gamified. Like, for instance, in Metal Gear Solid 3, you've got the stamina system that gets – that was introduced with that game, right?
It was either two – I think 3 did have the stamina, yeah. Two
where
was,
you, like, have to kill animals and eat them to survive. Yeah. But it's, like, gamified. So you, like, you basically touch a snake or frog or something with your knife, and then it turns into a ration can, and you get to hold on to it, and then you can eat it, and if it tastes good, then you get like a big stamina boost, and if it tastes awful, you get a, you know, it's like it's has nothing to do, like it just pays enough lip service to realism to make the game feel fresh and fun, but it doesn't get hung up on that. And that's where I think the strength of Metal Gear Solid really was, is that perhaps more so than any other game in the series since, it is that perfect mixture of kind of weird verisimilitude, but also, but mostly just like, let's make this fun. And it uses the 3D viewpoint to a huge effect. It makes the Metal Gear mechanics work so much better when you can hear people walking around looking for you, but you can't see them, because when you get somebody's attention, they're looking for you, your radar stops working.
I feel like sometimes the field of view isn't always the best, because you can't see people who are like right in front of you.
Well, the game is kind of balanced around it in a lot of ways. You know, like they knew what you could see, and they did it like a solid job of sort of paying attention to the level layouts.
I mean, but you can, it's great. Like it uses the, you have to, you can't just look at the screen and observe the guard movements that way, like you could in the old Metal Gear games. You have to really pay attention to like where the little blips on your radar screen are moving and stuff like that. And it has like, you know, a lot of fun, cheesy, silly extra stuff added to it. I think we should just rank this game because we're kind of telling people what I'm sure everybody already knows.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that the sequels, for all the things that they added, also kind of added more complexity to the formula, for better and worse. And I do like most of the games that they made after this, not so much MGS4, but most of the ones I do really like. But MGS1, I do really think hits the right balance between, you can definitely do this, but you have to actually learn this, and it does feel like the most accommodating entry of the series and a good entry point for anyone.
I want to rank this game pretty high, but I do want to point out that a lot of the stuff that is really innovative about the game is not this game's doing. It was earlier Metal Gear games. It was just, this was a great use of those concepts, but it was kind of decades old.
I wouldn't go back to an older Metal Gear game after this one, because this one takes all of those elements. Like, okay, well, this is great.
Play the original Metal Gear after Solid. You really don't.
You don't need to, but I think that you're like, if you want to understand and appreciate Metal Gear as a series as a whole, and what it innovated, how early on it innovated it, I mean, you got to play it. That was a big deal. Like, back in the 80s, like, to make a game like Metal Gear, this is a huge deal.
I'm a giant
fan. This game is not that kind of quantum leap
But I would say that we have been discussing this. This is the last Metal Gear game, and it's the first Metal Gear Solid, but it's the last one that has that style of game. After this one, they made enough changes to the formula. It was kind of a different kind of game in some ways.
They were smart. They were like, we can't just make this game again. We have to do something a little bit different.
I mean, every Metal Gear game does something different, and I'm a big fan of the series, and I do like most of them a lot. But MGS1, after all these years, still remains my favorite, and I'm definitely going to place it pretty darn high on the list. What were you thinking?
Okay, so who thinks they would rank it the highest? Let's do it that way.
Not quite, but pretty high.
I mean, no. I mean, not high, not at the top. But I'm saying who here of all the, like, who here thinks that they have the highest opinion of this game would rank it the highest?
I assume it's Tenga, because I know that he likes the series and he likes the game. So.
Oh, my. Feel free to downvote like, this,
above
but...
Shakespeare and the concept of sexual intercourse.
Oh, for God's sake.
I would put it right up there.
Okay, I expect you guys to downvote this, but I'm going to pitch it between the two Mario games.
I mean, look, I mean,
below Doom.
Can I?
I can move that.
I was thinking maybe between Earthbound and Bionic Commando. Is that too low?
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good place to put it. I might put it above Earthbound, below Loadrunner.
My question is, I had been looking around Loadrunner. I wasn't sure if it was better or worse than Loadrunner. Because, I mean, that Loadrunner is, in a lot of ways, that's not the original Loadrunner either. You're going, Metal Gear Solid is not the original Metal Gear. Well, that's not the original.
But they're both kind of like the definitive game.
Yeah, they're both kind of like,
but I wouldn't go so far as to say that by playing Metal Gear Solid, you have seen everything the original Metal Gear games had to offer. That's not true. Like, those games were different because the display of the games is... very, very different, having the top-down thing. It's a slightly different gameplay experience. Whereas with Loadrunner versus Loadrunner Online, it's just up-res graphics, basically. It's not, it's not like you're looking at
a wider viewport, which is...
Right. I mean, but, in the original one, you could see the entire screen all the time. But that's a smaller difference. But I'm not definitely saying that I would rank Metal Gear higher than Metal Gear Solid. I'm just want to say that, like its achievement is not quite like, it's not like going from Super Mario World to Super Mario 64 kind of thing. It's much more like, oh, we had an old game that would work really well in 3D. Let's just do it and make it, really. But the core mechanics are still MSX mechanics.
What I find interesting is against Loadrunner and Metal Gear is that they're kind of at the core very similar games, in some
way.
You
got to get away from the enemies.
I would say, and that's interesting because we were talking about, I was saying like I personally, although I like Metal Gear Solid a lot, like the one I go back to is the VR missions, which is just the training missions.
It gives all the gameplay without any of the plot that you despise so much.
Well, I don't despise the plot. I just feel like at the time, you just understand, I'm in high school and I'm like, I have read like, Thomas Pynchon and stuff like that. And I'm like, I think I'm really highly of myself as a literate person. And I'm like, it was dissonant. It's like there's a big difference between like trying to make a serious point and then like, remember, Rambo rips like a huge fart, right? That's in a nutshell what it is. And
at this time period in games, especially on consoles, even the tonal dissonance was like, wow, this game's so like realistic, right? And it's so people didn't think it was like tonally dissonant. They're just like, wow, he's like talking and he's got guns and he's talking about guns.
When Psycho Mantis is like, so you like cool borders or whatever he says, I don't know.
he says Suikoden and Castlevania. I know that for sure. There's a couple
like
others.
Konami games, like, or when he's like, put down your controller and I will move it with my mind. Like, oh my!
The funny thing is, like, people were like, "Holy crap, this is ingenious! Wow!"
Maybe like what, 11-year-olds? Like, who was?
It's kind of
that was the demographic.
Kind of shame these days that everyone kind of knows about that already.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like, that degree of fourth wall break was not commonplace in games.
The purpose it serves is
he's psychic and he's a mantis.
It is detrimental to the story. Like, if you want to tell a story, you don't have somebody do that.
We're not arguing this alongside the ranking, are we?
I'm just saying that the flourishes that get put into this game that kind of make it unique does detract from the other thing that it's supposed to do.
I mean, like,
I'm not saying that makes it bad. I think personally that makes the game better in a weird way because it just makes it unique. It makes it special. But I think you're fooling yourself if you think Psycho Mantis reading your memory card has anything but a, like, it breaks the fourth wall. It also shatters the suspension of disbelief.
I like the memory card thing in the sense that, oh, that's a neat gimmick. But the other things he does, I actually don't mind. Not the,
this game also has people like hiding like key items in their vagina, right? So there's,
Implicitly. Because, that's neither here
also
nor there.
Also, a dude who likes cigarettes so much, he had to put him in his stomach and puke them up so he could smoke them later.
Really gross.
Wait.
That's That happens. One thing I do like, and this is the fourth wall one that actually really is cool, is the codec on the case. That was very cool. You gotta give it to that. That was really neat.
I wonder if that was meant to be like copy protection of a sort.
Huh. I don't think it was. I think it was just coincidence that it kind of turned out that way. But that was really clever. Like, that was, you know, that was stepping back to, like, feelies and stuff for PC games.
Right. Like that Apple II prisoner adventure game where you have that code that they give you at the beginning, and it's, like, a randomized code, but you're not supposed to tell anybody the code. And then the game will try to trick you into revealing that code by having you, the game pretends to crash and tries to coach you through fixing it. And then it will have you type slowly out that code. And the legend has it, or Wikipedia has it, which is basically kind of like the 21st century way of saying legend has it, that the CIA used that to train field operatives in the old days, because it was very good at trying to trick you into doing that. That's the kind of thing that I love about the Metal Gear Solid games, is they're still working on kind of that old school level of really low tech.
Yeah, I mean, like,
silliness. Yeah.
Kojima is a fan of that. He wants that in his game.
So Satinga's for putting this above Super Mario Brothers 3. Everybody else seems to be below that. Bobinator said between Earthbound and Bionic Commando. I said between Loadrunner and Earthbound. Cal.
I mean, like, as I said, you could see that I was kind of like around Loadrunner, and I probably would put it above Loadrunner.
No, it's not, because you're already losing, so it's like,
with it being above Loadrunner, I guess.
Oh no.
I'm just not like right, I'm not sure lost. I'm so like
no
on
I've
the,
just lost no, I've just lost like, I think that tears it
this like is
that,
a razor's that. Edge thing, but I think, like, what Metal Gear Solid, like, when, especially when the Mad Monster Venge came out, it was just a good Loadrunner. The Metal Gear Solid game was like, this was a huge release for the time. Right. And it is a hugely influential game going forward in many ways. And that would probably push it, Metal Gear, above it, just because Loadrunner is a great game, but it's kind of more that the franchise, the actual individual Loadrunner, is only a really good Loadrunner. It's kind of like it came and
true,
went.
Although it really did, you know, yeah, but it did have like the level creation thing and all that.
It was great.
Yeah, but let me just throw this out here though, and yeah. I'm not trying to change your mind, but let me try to change your mind.
Okay,
no, and say that the one caveat I would say is that almost everybody and their dog has played Metal Gear Solid at this point, and it doesn't really need our promotion to encourage people to play it. So when you put it above a game that many people have not played, you're kind of, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'm just saying that
put the Mario games all at the top, and I mean, you know, they don't need more people.
I do feel like a lot of people do not play those older Mario games, because there are new Mario games that are ostensibly similar that you can play. Like, a lot of kids might not play go back to
well I'm sure most kids are playing Mario Maker more likely at this point.
Yeah So you have that, but like with for example, I think that a lot of people don't play Doom. Like, if they didn't play it when they were kids, they might not play it, and that's one reason why you might want to promote. Or same thing with Loadrunner, maybe not so much Earthbound, it seems to be kind of evergreen, but I'm just saying, like, you know, when I'm doing a coin flip kind of scenario where I consider both games to be equally important or equally good, I kind of want to weight it towards the game that most people haven't played. But, you know, I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, you're gonna show your age a little bit here, but I don't think like Metal Gear Solid and the games before it. You know, I think most people are like, oh, I've played Metal Gear Solid 4, I've played 5, because those are the new release. Even like 3 is the one that everyone holds in the highest esteem.
Okay, you got me. Okay, that's a good point. Well, I guess Metal Gear went a little bit higher than I thought it would, although, you know, it's worth it. And you know what else is worth it? Giving a couple bucks a month to your favorite website and podcast on Patreon. I know I do, and it's quite rewarding. In addition, you know, to the self-worth increase that you feel from having contributed something to society and the world and culture and video games, is the satisfaction in knowing that you're going to get these podcasts as soon as they're finished, rather than having to wait like a sucker until the next Friday.
If you haven't convinced anyone else before, then I think that would definitely do it.
The next game we're talking about is Aliens Infestation, which was nominated by Jason Areola on Twitter. Developed by WayForward Technologies and Gearbox Software, published by Sega, you may have heard of them, for the Nintendo DS. The earliest release date was actually in Australia, September 29th, 2011. It beat Europe by a day.
I should note that the credit for Gearbox Software is primarily nominal, because this game was originally intended to more or less be the DS port of the very unfortunate release for Aliens Colonial Marines. And
so it kind of amounts to like a story by credit, or...
I want to say, yeah, more or less. I mean, it's weird because, like, the game they were making before this, when it was supposed to tie in with Colonial Marines, was different. Then Marines just got into overtime, and then the DS game was canceled. But then it was uncanceled, but then it was a different game. It's kind of confusing from what I understand. But
I mean, the answer is essentially they still had the license, and they still had some games. They went, you know what? Let's do it.
Yep. Because Randy Pitchford wants money, but you shouldn't give it to him.
I'd like to talk about WayForward a bit first.
Yeah, sure.
I've always been kind of fond of them.
Me too.
I'd like to say that they're basically the living spirit of 90s Konami. In the fact that they make a lot of licensed games that end up being surprisingly good, but usually that's more for money for their stuff they put their real effort into.
Yeah, although it's hard to pick a WayForward game and say, oh, this is a dud. Like, they pretty much, they don't, you know, you can tell which games, like the licensed games are shoved out faster, probably, than the other games. Like a Shantae game probably has time to kind of mature.
This has probably had more effort put into it than, say, Hotel Transylvania.
Perhaps, but I want to point out, like, WayForward's licensed games, like, if you want to compare them to, I would say, I agree with you, I would say maybe early 80s or late 80s, early 90s Konami. So, like, the Ultra Games era especially. That does feel like the WayForward thing, because there's all these licensed games that, like, for example, like Roller Games, which is a license that I'm surprised they even finished the game, because the license was dead long before they got to put a game out.
Yeah, that's just such a weird.
Or like, Monsters in My Pocket, which is like a garbage license. Even at the time, it did not have enough. It was a cool. I liked the Monsters in My Pocket toys when I was a kid, but they were kind of like a niche product.
Mission,
these are licenses that won't sell games. They're just kind of like, what's a license?
Right. They're just like, what's a license we can slap on? It's like the. Yeah. The
don't forget the Lone Ranger.
Oh,
I don't know what deal with that was.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, I mean,
I'm not sure
made
if
a
Ultra
good
did
game
that
out
one,
of it.
Actually, yeah, no, Lone Ranger is surprisingly good. Well, although one that Ultra did do was Mission Impossible, based on the 80s revival of Mission Impossible, which that's some real SEO spectacularity, but. It's a good game, just way too hard for its own good. As a
you know what is a pretty good license? Aliens.
Cal wants to order Muppet Us today.
Here's the thank God he does, because the thing about Aliens, and this is not my original thought. This is probably somebody else's, but since I can't remember the name right now, I'm gonna spit it out there, and people can attribute it to whoever. Which is that the movie Aliens, the sequel to Alien, is kind of like the template for basically every modern shooter game ever.
They're right. No, it really has. It basically did become Contra, is probably the biggest influence I can pick on, which is appropriate. And speaking about the spirit of Konami, that WayForward, prior to this game, was picked to develop Contra 4, to very good effect, if I do say so.
She did an excellent job, yeah.
Like, I mean, there's no doubt that Aliens as a movie... Two games was one of the biggest influences of like just elements of games, which is interesting because the Alien games in general are very hit and miss. Some of them are okay. Some of them are pretty good.
I disagree. Satania and I were talking about this.
Yeah, they've had a better track record than most game adaptations go. Yeah.
The earliest Alien, let's just do the history of this because why not? But the earliest Alien game that I'm aware of is Alien 4, the Atari 2600. It was coded by Doug Neubauer, who's the Star Raiders guy, the Solaris guy, who was working at that time as a contractor for 20th Century Fox Games. And so what he did was is he made basically a Pac-Man clone. I think they might have even told him to do that. And he ended up making a better Pac-Man game than the Atari 2600 Pac-Man. And on top of it, in between the stages, you had a bonus level that was Frogger. So it was bonkers and crazy, but it was not a bad game by 2600 standards. The C64, the Commodore 64, had an Alien game that was excellent. It was like kind of a very proto survival horror game. It had
two
a lot of randomized.
One was British, one was American. They were entirely different games.
Oh, really? No, which one am I thinking of? The one where it's kind of randomized and you don't know who on the ship is the enemy. And
are we talking about Alien or Aliens?
Alien.
Okay, Aliens is the one that has two versions.
Well, Alien was an 8-bit system game, wasn't it?
Well,
so I know the Amstrad CPC has an Alien game on.
I'd like to move ahead into the main topic bit and say if there's anything Infestation reminds me of, it'd be Aliens 3 for the SNES.
Right, and that's the next thing I was going to go to.
And for the Mega Drive, it's not on just the
SNES. Alien 3 for the Super Nintendo.
SNES versus entirely different. It's a bit more mission focused.
Oh, okay. I didn't play the SNES one, yeah, but this did remind me of the Mega Drive one in places.
They're both surprisingly good games based off of a relatively controversial film.
Especially good because they were like Metroidvanias before that was a thing. They had that kind of element to them before people knew that, oh, if I'm going to make an indie game, I'm going to make a Metroidvania, you know, like they do now.
Kind of interesting. Alien, the Infestation itself is based off script disregards from canceled Alien 3, right? Like lots of bits and pieces were ripped out of that.
There's an antagonistic human force in Infestation called the UPP, which was actually a concept taken from William Gibson's script, the author of Neuromancer. He pitched a script for Alien 3 that was basically a giant Cold War allegory, which, you know, in 1987, I know he couldn't predict the future, but that would have been obsolete in 2 years, so maybe it's for the best that one wasn't realized, but it's like the UPP.
Hey, I'm down with UPP. I mean, they took that. What was cool about this is that this is the, you know, even Metroid took stuff from Alien in a kind of weird way. Oh, like the Metroids themselves is the best manifestation of the horror concept of the original Alien, which I don't dislike the sequel Aliens, but it is a completely different movie. It just happens to use the same designs and characters as the original Alien.
Well, the Alien is really smart. It is going to keep sneak up on you. It's going to kill you.
That is what's terrifying. And you are powerless. And this game is interesting because it kind of, you could see that they were kind of building towards that, but you have this other legacy, which is the sequel Aliens, which is like Halo and every other like futuristic shooter ever. It is the pole star for that entire genre. Like everything looks towards, like you've got the surly space marines who work for like a shady cyberpunk corporation who are out there hunting vaguely insect-like aliens who are, you know, I mean, it's all there and it's in Aliens, and James Cameron should be credited for doing that. I think there was also, by the way, there was all this weird stuff happening with the Alien canon. I believe there was a comic series that was parallel to the movie Aliens that was a little bit different. And this game might borrow from that as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's either they borrowed from it or they happen to come across the same sort of solutions and conclusions, which seems kind of too coincidental in places.
Right. I mean,
I think it's worth noting that this game was before the Alien Isolation, which is kind of like the reboot of that original Alien concept in a lot of ways.
Right.
So because there are some overlaps between what Infestation does and what Isolation does, so it's interesting that this came before that.
In a way, I mean, in a lot of ways, the entire Alien franchise has been a series of attempts to recapture the magic of the original, followed by let's just go crazy, followed by let's go back to the original. Let's just go crazy.
And Infestation is kind of a product of that echo of the film series and all of its related media.
It is a Metroidvania that isn't really a Metroidvania because there's not a lot of like collecting new items. There's collecting upgrades.
This is one of the few Metroidvania type games I play where like there's like very distinct and separate levels.
I mean, that's the thing about it, really. It's in some ways, it's just a normal, like, labyrinth sort of style game that's just kind of feels like a Metroidvania, but really it's just level by level that kind of each level plays out a little bit like a miniature, sort of Metroidvania.
What do you guys think that is? Do you think that they wanted to make a Metroidvania type game, or do you think that they really started out with this plan from the beginning?
I can tell.
Given the way the backgrounds and sort of the graphics and some of the set pieces work, I think they did want to sort of do it level by level because that kind of allows them to change locations a lot because, you know, they have like you visit several different aliens locations across this game.
Right.
And I don't think you could really do that if you were playing exclusively in like the one base sort of area, so they kind of like
went. You also return to at least one of them, right? Now,
well, actually, no. The structure is there are essentially five levels, but levels 1, 3, and 5 are all aboard the Sulaco, if you can believe it. It's only 2 and 4 where you actually go to new locations, and those new locations, LV-426, the planet from the first two films, and the latter one I think was like a station on Phobos or whatever. Those are more straightforward than the Sulaco, which
right.
The ship itself is a little bit more Metroid-ish, but it still feels like, you know, that the map's also relatively generous. It's not quite as secretive about things.
It's interesting. It's kind of like if Super Metroid started out on the main planet and then at a certain point sent you to the space station part of it, and that was a lot longer, and then you went back to the main planet again.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
Very, very. I know. Thank you. This is why I make the big bucks, people.
All right. Don't self-aggrandize yourself too much, just because I gave you a little push.
Okay, but like, okay, so we've said it's like Metroidvania. Like, actually, what do you? Because the game is a little bit of a different style of play. It's kind of like an action game, but it's not exactly
an action game. And here's the problem with it. As much as I hate to say, I don't want to say that it doesn't know what it wants to do. It doesn't know what kind of game it wants to be. I think that it's a game that they is a noble effort. What I like about the game is that it is a sort of Metroidvania, but it is a methodical, thoughtful action game that involves some backtracking.
I do like it has a very different feel from most Metroidvanias. You have to worry about ammo a lot. You have to worry about not letting your guys die, because actually dying is actually a pretty big deal, because you have a very limited number of lives.
Right. You have to find a new stranded Marine to get a new life.
And
they all have unique dialogue.
They have unique dialogue, unique art, right? Like, that's really cool.
That is a way forward thing to do.
You just don't feel anywhere near as powerful as you generally do in some, like, Metroid, which I think is an interesting difference. Mm-hmm.
I would say gameplay-wise, this one reminds me a bit of Blackthorn, which we've looked at before, and it definitely has echoes of that sort of
platformer kind of, there is kind of a little... But my problem with it is that most of the game seems designed around the assumption that you would have a kind of Metroid-esque freedom of movement, but your character doesn't. Your character has more of a Blackthorn freedom of movement, which is very restricted. So it makes things like especially the boss battles, which I want to point out are very cool, but terrible.
They look cool.
Especially
they're
really big. The best one, I think, is the second one, which is the Space Jockey, right? So in the original Alien... when they land their ship on this weird object and they go and investigate it and they find out, there's like another species has a spaceship here. And that's, by the way, the coolest part of the movie. That's something that is maybe one of the coolest science fiction movie moments ever is when they go into that thing and they find this colossal, like giant petrified corpse sitting in like a gunner's chair.
It is totally taken right out of H.R. Giger's work. It's
right. I mean, and there's this giant, like weird elongated elephant mannequin guy who is petrified because he's been killed by the what are the aliens supposed to be called?
Xenomorphs?
Okay, yeah, that's why I don't remember that, because it's stupid. So he was killed by one of the aliens, and but he's huge, and he's sitting in a thing, and then in this game, you go through that area after a really dumb, like, run-and-gun, like...
Like, extreme, excruciatingly long.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
Part was stupid. They tried to do something different, and it fell flat in his face. So I wonder if that APC bit was like, a kind of a desperate bid from some exec, more action, and...
I don't know. I think that it's just, like, this is a game where they were trying different stuff, and then at a certain point says that, guess what? This is shipping. And
I think
it was just where it was, you know.
Not to sort of jump you in, but I say that would be the biggest problem with it is that this game feels really repetitious. Like, you don't do very much different, and it just keeps going and going. The space junkie bit is great.
Yeah, it's cool. So you get to fight one of those things as a boss. And I think the idea is that it's been inhabited or possessed or something by one of the aliens.
I thought it was just like it's the – because, you know, the aliens generally, they don't all look the same. When they inhabit a different creature, it pops out.
Right, it has a different host body. It comes out looking slightly different.
And so this is the space jockey alien.
Right, so it's a space jockey. But the problem is that these boss fights, especially that one, I felt like was the worst because the angles of like where you have to hit, where its weak point are not easy to hit based on the controls in the mechanics of the game. Like it's really not always clumsy.
Clear if you're hitting the right thing because, you know, they do react, but it's kind
it
of
flashes,
kind of
but yeah, right. It flashes and it takes forever and you can – oh, God.
The fight is like running backwards and then rolling a lot and hoping you don't get hit.
Yeah,
and then
I actually have. I have less problem with the enemy's hitbox and more your own because, as Bob was saying, that your own movements aren't really built to evade fantastic attacks like all the acid puking and various enemy face huggers that they can spawn. Your limited movements do feel detrimental, and that the fights do kind of come down to wars of attrition.
Yeah, I'm really carefully going and generally methodical. Where's your aliens game?
Yeah, it does, but I feel like the boss battles are a real problem.
Even the first boss basically just wrecked me. Took out two of my guys.
Me too.
I couldn't beat a single boss without losing at least one Marine, no matter how good.
I love that the first boss is like the alien queen. Like, usually in an alien game, that's kind of reserved for like the end. And then in this one, it's like, okay, the first boss is the queen. Go get her.
But
and it's
game is very much premised on the idea that it is taking place parallel to the second two Alien movies. Which is kind of cool. I hate to dumb on this game because everything about the game is like they were really trying hard to make this a good game. And it is not a bad game.
They were trying hard to make this a good game that was also kind of not a generic Aliens game. Exactly. Like they wanted to really.
And not a generic Metroidvania. They were making it subsequent to like the DS and GBA Castlevania games. And they're like, we're not going to do that. And they did something different. The boss fights are garbage. And I feel like somebody said, how can you not have boss fights? Every one of these games has boss fights.
Well, I think they realized that they needed bosses to break the game up. But when they made them, they're like, our mechanics don't work.
If the bosses weren't there, would the game be better or worse? It would be better.
It would be better, but you could complain even more about it being like the same.
No. You'd be wrong. I mean, it's just like okay, so I'm putting this down, all right? This is like the 11th commandment. Boss fights that are unnecessary and stupid and not well-designed are worse than no boss fight. Right?
I feel like you could have trimmed down, you could have removed a boss fight or made them easier and just kind of made them crap.
Make them not, like, if you can't make a good boss fight, don't make a boss fight.
I find it ironic we're talking a lot about bosses now when I realize we almost completely left them out of our Metal Gear Solid discussion. And those are, on the whole, great bosses.
Talk about things that are bad. You talk about those a lot more than things that are good. By the way,
let's talk about the Star Wars prequels for 50 minutes.
For God's sake.
So, yeah, I mean... My main problem with the game is the bosses are terrible. They don't work around the mechanics of your character's movement. I feel like a lot of the enemies in the game don't quite work quite right the way that your character moves. There's a lot of issues with
humans,
cover mechanics and stuff. Like, enemies can
pop
up.
Is, enemies take so many hits to kill generally, especially just the regular guys.
At least until you get the shotgun and start getting the upgrades. Yeah, it's really bad. Once you get the shotgun and start upgrading that up, it's a little bit easier.
You've got this alien game where, you know, everything feels like it's just a meat soak for bullets when usually that doesn't happen in Aliens and that sort of thing. You know, usually right.
The aliens die surprisingly fast compared to the dudes who die exactly the same speed as aliens, which doesn't make sense. A dude should be dead within, like, you know, like you hit him with a couple less than a half a second from your machine gun burst should kill a dude. An alien should take a while to go down, but you can beat them in about the same amount of time. The problem is that they messed up the whole benefit of the franchise, which was that this was their chance not to make a better Super Metroid or a different Super Metroid. This was their chance to make a better Metroid 2, because the Alien franchise is about horror. It's about lurking terror in the dark. That's the strength of the concept. That's what is scary about those creatures. And you have this idea of, like, what if instead of having, like, set rooms where you go to and there's a Metroid, you know, like Metroid 2, right? What if you had one alien per area and it was just moving around and you didn't know where it was going to appear? This is like marrying the best concept of the original Commodore 64 Alien game into a Metroidvania game. That was the opportunity. And I feel like it's so obvious they must have tried it and they just didn't have time to make it work because it was hard
to
do.
I want to say that's how Isolation actually worked out when that was released.
Right. It's an obvious idea because that's how Alien and Alien 3 work. That's how those movies work. It's about one alien or an isolated group of it's about exploring an area, trying to get through something to your objective without being murdered, like, horrifically by some horrible, unspeakable thing that is crouching, lurking in the shadows. You have no idea where it is. If you add to that, you've got these human dudes who are attacking. You've got regular enemies. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, there's an alien in this area. Like, your alarm goes off. Your heart starts to, like, you know, you're going to have a heart attack because you're like, I am not ready for this. There's something out there. I know next door I go through, it could be the alien in there. Like, that is a powerful and very gamified kind of concept. And I feel like they must have tried it and they just didn't have time. It's like, no, our license expires next year. This ships now.
Yeah, I think part of it is that they also were struggling. It's a DS game, and they're constantly struggling against being a DS game. Where do we rank this? I mean, I've got an opinion, and that's
let's hear
above
it.
Donkey Kong Country let's hear 3. It. That's it. Above Donkey Kong Country 3. That's a
yeah. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, so that's it. Right above
Donkey Kong Country
3. Yeah. Right below Pulse Man and recording.
Yes, yeah. It's your game.
That's all for this episode of HardcoreGaming101.net's Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to my bros, DJ Funk Nova and Jason Areola, for nominating those games. And thanks as well to those of you who haven't gotten to yet. We will be getting to you soon. And thanks to my lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our editor Jeff Rudd, our theme song composer Muteki, and of course, the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. And by the way, because I did that, I get early access to all these podcast episodes as soon as they're finished. I also get that because I finished the episodes, but I'm just, you know, putting that out there. You can also help us by checking out our YouTube channel, where we put up video versions of these podcasts. We do split them up into individual games, and you can watch the game footage as we talk about it. It's a multimedia experience. You can help us by following @HG_101 and @GCNX on Twitter. But most importantly,
Help us claw our way into the zeitgeist by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. If in the text of your 5-star review you nominate a game that we haven't ranked yet, we will get to that one. We will fast track it and try to do it on the very next episode. Do it, or I will call a team of dudes to search for you thoroughly for exactly 100 seconds. Until next time, keep keeping it real.